WMATA. Now, our first order of business has been traditionally that we hear from the public. We have one speaker who has presented themselves for this opportunity, Mr. Paul Letty from the District of Columbia. Is Mr. Letty here, if I'm correctly pronouncing your name? Am I correctly pronouncing your name?
Paul Letty.
Paul Letty, I did correctly pronounce it then. Mr. Letty, we are pleased to have your statement.
Okay, I understand I have 2 minutes. So I think I can do that. I'm Paul Letty. I've lived in the metro area for 40 years, ever further out than Atlanta, Maryland. I've lived in the district for 20 years. I live in Southwest on the waterfront the past 10 years. I gave up my car in January 2008 and rely on public transportation. And after a day of grieving, losing that car, I kicked myself for not having done it sooner. I have to be at Mass at 7 a.m. before 7 a.m. Sunday morning, and I rely on public transportation, the 70 bus and then the 80 bus to get me to Rhode Island and Connecticut. The bus rarely comes on time, if it comes at all. It's been going on for a year. I've complained, emailed, written letters, phone calls, gotten one phone call back saying that they would take care of it, which should be a very peaceful and quiet moment for me before, as I start my day and before I get to St. Matthew's. I have a Pavlovian response of being angry, anxious, frustrated, and I'm angry about it. I've taken off today from my job to come here because I don't know how else to get it through to you that that bus has to show up and not find out that the driver just didn't show up for work. Or that, yes, I missed the bus. I get there 10 minutes, 20 minutes before the bus arrives, and I'll wait till 6:30. And the answers I get back is the bus was there, that I missed it for a year now. So whatever it is you have to do, either tell me that you're discontinuing it, find another way, or make it work. I have a bad leg, and I have run after the 42 and 46, made a fool of myself. And I can't run. I have a bad leg. I've taken cabs. It's cost me $20. The anxiety of trying to find a cab at the Southwest at 7 a.m., 6 o'clock, Sunday morning. I can't take that anymore. If you can do something, do something. If you can't, don't, but let me know.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Letty. And our general manager has noted each of your concerns about this. And Mr. Letty, we have your address, your phone number as well. And I'm going to ask the general manager to look into this directly and to be back in touch with you. Thank you very much for coming here today. Mr. Zimmerman?
My phone doesn't seem to be working. The question I was just, as the gentleman was looking at this, the bus service, was of course, right after our discussion, next door earlier, reliability can be a function of several different things, and I'd be interested in the specific case you're looking at for this group. Are we looking at a problem that is related, for instance, to issues that are to some degree beyond our control? Sometimes it's the structure of the route, where it goes in terms of traffic, that makes certain routes very difficult. Sometimes there are things that we could do that are management related. Sometimes they're incident related, like problems with, say, a bus driver. I'm interested in hearing when you come back to us what your sporadic problems are.
Oh, now it's working. Good. Okay. At any rate, I think it's interesting in this particular case since it was brought to us, but it also is something that can form our understanding of these kind of problems with bus service more generally. Thank you.
Here's what happens is that, thank you very much, Mr. Zimmerman, for your comment. We can't keep our microphones on. We have to turn. And when we turn the individual microphone on, it empowers the other microphones, apparently. So that's a little piece of information. Now we move to...
Actually, mine works well.
Oh, yours does work.
So I think there's another problem.
Could you turn yours off?
I did, though.
All right, good. Well, we're off to a roaring start. And we'll be checking the microphones between now and the next meeting, won't we? We'll make sure this whole system works correctly. Mr. Cato.
Yes, sir. And the reality is we need a replacement of this system. This system is so outdated, and that's one of our capital needs. We will work on this, but...
Anyway,
we will look at what we need to do for this.
We now move to the approval of the agenda. I have one matter that I'd like to take off the agenda, which is under the report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. I'd like to remove item C, which is a wholly district-related issue relating to the blue buses in Georgetown. We'd like to remove this for the time being. There being no objection, that item is removed. Is there further comments on the agenda? Further comments? Then, is there objection to approving the agenda as amended? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The agenda is approved. We now move to the approval of the minutes of the January 29th board meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin and seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion on the motion? Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. We now proceed to the report of the Writers Advisory Council, and I want to say that this is the maiden report of Ms. Zinkel from the District of Columbia, and we welcome you, and we are anxious to hear your report.
Okay. Oh, thank you very much, Chairman Graham. First of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Diana Zinkel, and I am one of the D.C. representatives and the 2009 chair of the WMATA Writers Advisory Council. We had our elections earlier this month in February. In addition to electing myself as chair, we elected Patrick Sheehan of Maryland as first vice chair and Penny Everline of Virginia as second vice chair. Both Patrick and Penny have been on the Writers Advisory Council for over a year, and Mr. Sheehan is actually also the chair of WMATA's Accessibility Advisory Council. Now, before I move on to a summary of the rest of my report, I wanted to give you a little bit more of an introduction of who I am. First of all, I'm always proud to let folks know that I'm a native of Wisconsin, and my family's from Milwaukee. I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is a fairly small town, much smaller than D.C. It's about 100,000 people these days, and I grew up more often than not getting around on the bus and my bicycle on my feet because my father worked all day and my mother had a visual impairment and could not hold a driver's license. So I am a lifelong transit user and user of alternative transportation. I have continued that as I've moved on from Green Bay, and I have actually never in my life owned a car. For those who are curious, I am 37 years old, and I, which most people don't believe, but I did not have a car in college, and after college, as I moved on to live for several years in Boston and the San Francisco Bay Area, I continued my car-free transit-dependent lifestyle, and I've continued that for 6 years here in Washington. Most of my career, I've worked in policy. I've been in policy for 13 years. I have a JD as well as a master's degree in city and regional planning. And I currently am employed as an analyst at the Government Accountability Office right across the street. So I'm in a perfect position to keep an eye on y'all. and with that introduction, I think one of my goals for the RAC for this year is to hopefully build closer relationships between the RAC and the board. And to that end, I'm inviting all of you to stop by and visit us at any of our monthly meetings. We meet on typically the first Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8:30. Mr. Zimmerman has stopped by a few times, and the rest of you are welcome anytime you would like to come by. We're happy to make room for you in our agenda. And with that invitation, having offered that invitation, I'm also going to ask you a favor. A couple of years ago, for National TV Turnoff Week, I turned off my TV for an entire week. Now, various points in my life, I spent a summer living in Alaska when I didn't have TV. I've made several trips to Central and South America, where, of course, the TV access was, you know, the occasional common TV in a bed and breakfast lobby, and it was in Spanish, a language I don't speak. So I've been TV-free at various points where I was out of my idiom at other points in my life. But this is the first time, just as part of my day-to-day experience, I turned off my TV and went through an entire week without watching TV at all. And it was harder than I thought and also easier than I thought. So what I'm going to ask you to do today is I'm going to ask all of you at some point in this calendar year to live the way that Penny Everline, Patrick Sheehan, and I myself live, which is put down your car keys for a whole week. For 1 week. You can. It's not cheating to run all your errands on Sunday and start on Monday morning. It's not cheating to pick a week when the weather's going to be beautiful and balmy in April or October. But I'm asking you to live for 1 week the way many of the people in this area live, either out of choice or because, for many of them, because they don't have a choice. They can't hold a driver's license, they can't afford a car. I think it is an experience that will not only change how you perceive this system and some of the things that people come to you asking about, for instance, the gentleman who just came to you talking about how difficult it is for him to get to church on Sunday morning. I think it will also change how you perceive your communities in a much more holistic way. So, with that, I will give you a summary of some of what we talked about at our last RAC meeting. In addition to our elections, we also had a presentation by Carol Kissel and Rick Harkham regarding the WMATA 2010 proposed budget. The riders' representatives were most concerned about the potential for cuts to service that might be implemented to balance Metro's budget operating budget. In addition, we decided to form a working group to address service adjustments and to provide a forum for us to present our opinion to the board of how WMATA should proceed with service adjustments. Today, we haven't really heard much from the authority staff on the service adjustments and would welcome any kind of input they might have from us. I think we'd like to have a better understanding of the process of how those service adjustments were determined and what it might mean in terms of particular neighborhoods and particular demographics that might be impacted. So you're welcome as well to stop by anytime you like, provided we can, you know, but we do need to find the time for you. In addition, Mr. Francis and Mr. Kent came by to discuss the customer service standards that they've developed for the authority and asked for our input. And we're also hoping to put together a working group that can work directly with them to bring more additional rider input into those standards. I'll speak only for myself, as I was very impressed by their effort. And you know, it seems from what I've learned so far to be a very innovative step in terms of incorporating customer service into public transportation. And with that, I think I've probably exceeded my time several times over, and I just want to thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much, Chairman. We look forward to your future reports. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, this issue comes up from time to time, so I think just for the record, because I know we often get discussions about how we and board members use Metro or use the system or don't use the system. But for 7 years, I was Carlitz in this district from Northern Virginia, didn't use a car and used Metro or other services every single day. So I want to put that on the records for just so that there are times when many of us have experienced something like that, but there are also times when we don't do it right now. So I'm not in a position to do that now, but I would say that, yes, there are many of us who've had those kind of experiences and understand some of the challenges and the opportunities that service in the transit system provides. So I just want to, once and for all, just kind of lay that out there, put it out there for now, and be done with it. Thank you.
We'll now proceed to my report. Let me begin with a very brief statement in terms of my chairmanship of this board. First, I want to thank the board for electing me as chairman for 2009. This year also marks my 10th year as a member of this board. And I had the opportunity previously to be chairman of this board. In fact, it was in 2003. And I want to spend a moment or two on that experience. But first, let me thank my predecessor, Chris Zimmerman from Arlington, for his fine leadership over this past year. Much was accomplished during his tenure as chairman. And I want to again thank you. I know you got a rather large and impressive and appropriate symbol of that leadership, but I want to again thank you very much, Chris, for your work. As I mentioned, I was chairman in 2003, and it's interesting, I've kind of harkened back to that period because it was a very different period than we face today. I recall a record snowstorm, a major hurricane, and some economic challenges, which in retrospect seem very minor today. I also recall some very significant accomplishments during that year. I'm especially proud of the fact that after several years of effort, we finally extended our Metro Rail service fully to 3 a.m. on weekend nights, a move that has brought enhanced safety, convenience, and economic benefit ever since. We began a long-term program to improve elevator and escalator reliability, a challenge that remains with us today, but we started it then. We completed the escalator canopy pilot program, which has been a key piece of our ongoing work to improve escalator performance. We created a two-year demonstration program, which I'm also very proud of, to give preference to small and local businesses. This program has since become permanent. We extended the Blue Line to Largo, Maryland, and we made great progress in what is now the very popular New York Avenue Metro Station. So today is very, obviously very different. We are facing a world economic recession, and there is much that is affecting us here in terms of that. This board and WMATA staff have worked hard to cut, to review various possible cuts in our budget in order to deal with this economic crisis. But we will also need to improve service and address our persistent rail and bus overcrowding problems. And so we find ourselves this year in a challenging situation where we're going to be called upon to do more with less, which is always a very difficult situation. And doing more with less means making use of every great idea that's out there. I recently met with the DC members of the Writers Advisory Council, which, by the way, I'm going to try very, very hard to not call RAC. I'm going to call it the RAC if I wanted an abbreviation. But I was truly impressed once again with the passion and intelligence and creative ideas that our RAC brings to the table. And I intend to support a stronger role for the RAC in this coming year. They've already been very helpful, but I think we can expand upon what has previously been a single appearance once a month. We have just heard from Ms. Sinkel, and I think we can do more to take advantage of the minds we have working for us there at the RAC. So I have proposed in the bylaws a process that permits committee chairs to invite the RAC to committee meetings in order to present and participate on specific issues. In addition to that, I want to mention and emphasize real-time bus arrival. During my time as chairman, I will do everything possible to get our customers up-to-the-minute information about when their bus is going to come. This next bus technology is a way to improve service without spending a lot of money. If you know that your bus won't arrive for 15 minutes, you can pull out your book, have a seat, perhaps even get a cup of coffee. These are the kinds of low-cost, high-efficiency improvements that we need when funding is tight and that our ridership will truly appreciate. Doing more with less also means making strategic bus improvements. Today, we have pending board approval of express bus service on 16th Street, which will run from Maryland right downtown. And that is a great example of this. Adding limited stop service to one of our busiest corridors gets a lot of bang for our buck, and we will provide faster, more efficient service in just the location where it is badly needed. Our recent push to get customers to use Smart Trip cards was another great example of doing more with less. By reducing the use of cash payments, we can load our buses more quickly and therefore keep our buses on schedule without the costly step of needing to add more buses to the route. But we're not done with this process yet. We still have a lot of people who haven't figured out how to use this new Smart Trip service system. And that's not good for Metro, and it's certainly not good for anyone who has to pay a double fare every time they transfer buses. I plan on working with WMATA staff to make sure we continue outreach to elderly riders, non-English-speaking riders, and anyone else who hasn't received the support necessary to make this transition. Now, one of the things I bring to this chairmanship is a unique position as also being chairman of the Legislative Committee for oversight for transportation issues. I am the chair of the D.C. Council Committee on Public Works and Transportation. And that enables me to help Metro in various ways. We can, in the District of Columbia, expand our signal priority system to give buses certain preference at traffic lights. And we can design our roadways in ways to allow for efficient bus movements. In fact, I just introduced a bill to reduce double parking in D.C. in loading zones and other places, which will help prevent and eradicate congestion that has a major impact on slowing down our buses. Now, one way to do more with less is to do more with more. And there are opportunities for more in this coming year. First, the stimulus package, the federal recovery program from President Barack Obama, holds great promise for this authority, and it couldn't come at a better time. And so we're looking forward to very skillful, effective spending in terms of our new stimulus support. In addition to that, we have the issues of dedicated funding. I intend to make it a top priority in this year that we get this $1.5 billion in matching federal funds to help support our capital program. The D.C. Council has already passed a bill that I authored, which will put into place the necessary compact amendments. And I want to acknowledge the support that I received on that from Councilmember Michael Brown. The compact amendments are now pending in quite interesting ways in Maryland and Virginia, and we should have the outcome of all of that soon. And I want to specifically acknowledge the role that our colleague, Arlington County Board Member Chris Zimmerman, has played in the Virginia legislature, and I want to also acknowledge Fairfax County Board Member Catherine Hutchinson, who's been very involved in Virginia, and certainly Peter Benjamin has been walking that particular tightrope in Maryland for us. And so we have people really hard at work. We don't want to do anything that can be avoided in terms of jeopardizing this money. With this additional federal funding, we can make sure that capital improvements that help us run this system more efficiently, buy buses that are more reliable, escalators that work consistently, new rail cars with doors that don't jam, all of these investments will help us save money on a day-to-day basis and better serve our riders. As chairman, I will focus on how we can enhance efficiency at every turn. If we must make cuts, we should identify those services that are truly a drag on our system, services that provide benefit to very few people. There's no question about it that if I had to pick a year to be chairman once again, you know, I wonder whether 2009 would be the ideal year. But I'm reassured by the talent of this system, the genius of this system. I always quote Chris in saying, Metro WMATA is the region's success story, and it is. And with a regional point of view, I know we can make it. I do also feel great confidence as a result of our staff leadership. I think the masterful talent that John Cato brings to this authority makes all the difference. And so I look forward to this year with you, Mr. Cato, and beyond, and all of the staff who make up this agency, and of course, you know, our dedicated ridership. So while this is a very challenging time for every service in the really in the world, but certainly here in the District of Columbia, I think we can do it. I think working together we can overcome these challenges, and I think we will end up doing a great deal more this year, even under these circumstances, than we did last year. So I thank you all very much for your confidence. Now we have before us the first order of business is the approval of the 2009 board procedures. I will move the procedures. Is there a second? Who is the second? Mr. Zimmerman is the second.
Sure, a second. I do have a couple of questions.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, of course, there's mostly minor changes, but one of them that gives me a little concern regards the minutes, and we have under, I guess, in two locations under item, I think it's 7E. Actually, that's the second place it appears. It's for the board in general, it appears under 5, and then under 7E for the committees. Essentially, it's proposed to eliminate the written minutes and rely on audio recording. And I would suggest that I think it's important to have a written record of at least the actions taken, you know, what meeting was held, when it was held, who was there, what was done, who voted on what. I agree that it is not necessary and generally not helpful to have, you know, an attempt of sort of doing the congressional record and trying to get everything people said. I don't think that works very well, and I agree that a recording is a better way to capture that. But I think we need to have a formal record of the actions taken, and I'm afraid that, you know, we've even seen this morning some of the difficulty we have with the system we have. Who knows at what point it will actually be functioning right. Again, given our constraints on capital, there are reasons why these things are deferred and deferred. But I would suggest that while it's appropriate to have an audio recording, and it probably should specify audio since you know, it is done both ways. I would say in my own jurisdiction for years, this is essentially what we did. We've heard the formal record for many years was audio recording, but we have written minutes that record the specific actions. And then more recently, we've gone to video recordings, and they're accessible. You can get them online. You can look at them, you know, the last meeting, and so everybody has access to them. We're not in a position to do that here. We don't have the visual capacity. And it's not clear to me we're yet ready even to do that in accessible form for audio. My suggestion, Mr. Chairman, would be that we not eliminate all reference to written minutes, but that we continue to have written minutes that, you know, at least do that minimum amount of recording of the formal actions, and that we work toward more effective audio recordings that can be maintained. That would be my suggestion. Obviously, I'd like to hear the thoughts of my colleagues.
Mario. I would only ask that we make it clear that the written minutes shall be limited to a recordation of major motions in terms of who made the motion, who seconded the motion, and the content of the motion, and the vote on the motion. And that everything beyond that, you could submit a statement, I suppose, but everything beyond that be very limited. So that, because we've spent a lot of time, you know, you haven't quite got my nuance on this particular, you know, sentence that I uttered. And the whole point of this is to move away from that and simply memorialize the actions. And I think that's what I take your, and of course we'd want to record the quorum and the members present at the beginning of the, is that exactly?
Mr. Chairman, that exactly captures what I'm trying to get at. And the only question is what language in 5 and 7 will take care of that for us.
Well, I think we can, can't we leave that as a technical issue that we can be reported back to at the next meeting?
I assume we would have to take action or for it to be part of the bylaws.
Well, I think we have the gist of it, and we can proceed with that, and then we can see the specific language at the next meeting.
Very well.
Okay.
I had one other. Perhaps along the same lines, on the board committees, we had some subcommittees that were essentially created at the board level. In these minutes, they would be eliminated. Their functions, though, may still be necessary. I would suggest that they are. We need an audit committee. It's going to have to do something. Otherwise, the full committee is going to spend a lot of its time doing it, which I'm not sure is the way we're going to want to function. Similarly, I think the technical review committee and the work that Mr. Benjamin, Mr. McKay, and Mr. Jane Cole have been doing has actually been extremely helpful to the board. But they don't necessarily need to be done in the way we've done them. But perhaps we could, as I think you and I have discussed, Mr. Chairman, have some measure included in the board committee description that empowers the committee chairman to create such subcommittees as may be needed. I wonder if Ms. O'Keefe could help us on something like that.
The language I would suggest would be after the sentence in that provision that says the chair may establish special or ad hoc committees as needed with board concurrence, I would suggest you insert an additional sentence that reads, committee chairs may establish ad hoc, special, or subcommittees to assist in the work of their committees.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that as an amendment to the motion.
It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman and seconded by Ms. Hutchins. Is there discussion, Ms. Hutchins?
I just wanted to offer my concurrence and convey Mr. McKay's concerns about this and his interest in seeing us continue this process, so the language incorporates the opportunity for us to continue that.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. That amendment is carried. Are there further comments on the bylaws or the procedures?
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Albert?
Yeah, I was just wondering if we could get some clarification on what constitutes significant staff action. It's Article 2 for directive. It's written in a very bureaucratic manner. All requests made by the board member for significant staff action are directed to the general manager, and then have to give the general manager 2 weeks to respond. And then what happens in cases of emergency where you need the information faster than 2 weeks. So I just like some clarification, one, on what's significant action, how do you define that? And what happens if a board member has information they need faster than 2 weeks, how do we get that?
Thank you very much for that question, Mr. Albert. I am going to defer to the general manager because this is one of the changes in the bylaws which originated with them, which I was willing to advance. Do you have a response to that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, there's surely two parts there. One, significant request would require action or work on the part of a Ramada staff member. Those type of requests should come to me for two reasons. One, I have to assure that whatever response is given is consistent with the direction that the agency is going. And second, I need to know what information is being provided to a board member. This does not mean if you just want a copy of a document, you're requesting copies of documents that have been developed. But if you're directing or you need information that requires research or a policy interpretation, then that should come through my office. But the 2 weeks, I was surprised to see 2 weeks. No, I generally do not have 2 weeks to get back to you. In most of the requests, there's a response back either that day or the next day or within a couple of days, depending upon how much research is necessary to be accomplished.
Mr. General Manager, let me barge in here.
Certainly.
Because I have said something that is somewhat misleading. This provision has been in the bylaws for some years. The only change in this, we would have been aided by a red line copy here. The only change here is to add Inspector General. Thank you. Is to add Inspector General in the first sentence and Board Secretary in the second. So that this is the only change from the prior year bylaws. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I wanted to clarify this immediately. And if the board has a question about the rest of this, that relates not to any amendment that is coming forward today, just so. So then we're left with the question that Mr. Albert is raising.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So I was asked, I recognize that the only significant change to this item was the insertion of the Inspector General language, but my question is still relevant as to the definition, which I think you did a good job of defining. But what happens in case of emergency where a quick turnaround might be required? And a second follow-up to that is, what happens if you're not available, Mr. General Manager? How do you delegate that response, and to whom actually you did delegate that responsibility to respond to the board members?
Well, the secretary of the board generally receives requests from board members, and if I'm not there, that could be the path or the deputy general manager. When I'm out of the office, I do leave who's in charge, but generally I get back on the request very quickly. What I'm trying to say is what I do not want to have happen is that direction is given to staff to do work while I have them doing something else. Again, there are those cases where you might request us a copy of documents, and that normally occurs. You contact the person directly. But if everything came through the secretary of the board, we'd be able to categorize what was asked. We know the response time. We could keep documentation of that and ensure that all board members receive the same information.
Mr. Chairman.
Just to clarify, I think there's two different issues here. The working through the board secretary is a good idea for the reasons that Mr. Kaler just said, but I think in answer to Mr. Albert's question, whenever the general manager is not on duty, there is a designee.
Yes.
He designates somebody to act in his stead, most typically the deputy, but depending on the time of year and the circumstances, it might be somebody else. But there's always someone who is available who can take the instruction. Secondly, if the real reason for this provision, which as was said has been there some time, is basically just to ensure that the proper structure, the chain of command is followed. The general manager needs to know what's going on in his organization, so we can't have board members making things happen that aren't under the direction of the general manager. On the other hand, it is understood that what a jurisdiction needs to have in information or anything like that, it needs to get. And I think that you'll find that they're generally pretty accommodating about that. So it's general manager or his designee, and as a practical matter, that often means he's designated some senior person to receive things on particular areas, and you can get information from them. I would like to suggest, Mr. Chairman, since this came up, the change here was because we didn't used to have Inspector General, and the Inspector General doesn't work for the General Manager. That's the whole point. So it had to be listed separately. We should also include in that list General Counsel, who also reports and is responsible directly to the board. So my suggestion would be to include in that sentence General Manager, comma, General Counsel, comma, or the Inspector General. And I'd ask if there's consent to include that.
Is there objection to that change? Hearing none, that's incorporated. Is there further discussion on the procedures? Further discussion on the procedures? Hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the procedures for the WMATA Board of Directors for 2009 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the procedures are adopted as amended. The next order of business is the proposed committee assignments, which is contained in your folder. I move the committee assignments. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by myself and seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? 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 Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the proposed committee assignments for the Metro Board of Directors in 2009 are approved. Now we have a swearing in. Alexa Dupigny Samuels, who is to be sworn in as the Chief Safety Officer. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will keep my report very brief this morning, given all the work we have to do. I'm sad to say that last week, Metro released 40 administrative employees throughout the agency at all levels in the initial phase of a job reduction activity or process that we're taking to help close the projected FY 2010 budget gap. These job reductions are part of the $81 million in reductions that I have proposed to help close that gap, and they are not directly tied to our service schedule. We will be reducing more positions between now and the end of June, and some of these positions will be positions that are filled. As hard as it is to make these decisions and reductions, it must be done to keep the authority running within its budgetary constraints. That's cold comfort for anyone whose job was part of the reduction. And to those of us whose friends and colleagues are leaving, especially because these reductions are not a reflection of any employee's performance, they are an indication of the tough economic times that this nation as a whole is currently facing. I appreciate the dedication and hard work of the employees whose jobs have been eliminated and wish them the best. I also appreciate the board's efforts and efforts to consider the 2010 budget. I thank you for holding the extra committee and working sessions as we work with this difficult issue. Many of you may have read that we have began a page on Facebook and have asked Metro customers to make suggestions on what they think might be the best ways to increase non-passenger revenues. There have been some interesting ideas put forward, and I would like to, at some point, share more detail with you. It is, though, a way for us, again, to engage in a dialogue with our customers and may indicate the tones that we may receive in any future public hearings, should we hold any, would hear from our riders and customers throughout the system. Some of these suggestions that we heard was, again, loosening the restrictions on what can be advertised within the system and expanding the number of ads, like digital ads, and those that we are pursuing with metro channels. Again, across the board, and judging from the tone of the comments from the customers, the common thread was that our customers share our opinion that service cuts should be the final option. Again, as we work ahead on this budget, I will continue to receive those suggestions, and those that have merit, bring those recommendations to you for possible implementation. Last week, there were two train derailments that caused significant delays to customers on the orange and blue line and on the yellow and green lines. These incidents are still under investigation, but I will pass on to you some preliminary information of what occurred. On the morning of February 19th, the wheels of our vacuum truck, a piece of the maintenance equipment that we use to remove trash from the track beds, popped off of the tracks near the courthouse metro rail station. After the initial accident, it was very difficult to get this vehicle back to the rail yard, because it just wouldn't stay on the tracks after it was damaged. As we transported the vacuum truck back to the rail yard, it came off of the rails again, and we literally had to move it a few feet at a time to get it back into the yard, which resulted into major disruptions of services throughout the day. Later that same evening, an empty train derailed at Mount Vernon 7th Street Convention Center Metro Rail Station. We know this incident was not related to the thirst early in the day, but related to events that we've had in the past concerning guards on segments of the track that have been identified by the National Transportation Safety Board as probable causes. We have replaced the majority of those or placed guards on the majority of those sites identified, and we will complete the replacement of the switch on the very section at Mount Vernon where the derailment occurred this weekend. The standard replacement piece includes a guard rail, which will prevent this type of derailment. Again, we will provide you with additional information on what occurred as we complete our investigation. Mr. Chair, if I could, now I'd like to turn to our Deputy General Manager, Gerald Francis, so he can move into the employee spotlight section of the board report. Mr. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Cato. If I can have a board chairman, Mr. Graham and Mr. Cato, come to the center of the room. Let me start by saying that Metro safety is always job number one. And this month and for the next several months, we're going to be recognizing the winners of our new safety awards program in our employee spotlight. This award program identified the top safety performers in four different categories. Those were the Road Star, the Safety Service Star, the Rail Star, and the Rising Star. Today, we will be honoring a number of the Road Star awardees, and the remaining recipients of this group will be honored next month. In order to be qualified for a Road Star award, the recipients had to meet demanding criteria. First and foremost, they had to drive at least 1 million miles without a preventable accident. As impressive as that accomplishment is, it wasn't enough to qualify for this award. Each of our recipients has a record free of any metro rules and procedure violations, a record free of any disciplinary actions, a record free of any work-related injuries, and an exemplary record of attendance. Metro employees you are about to meet are the cream of the crop. They are examples to each of us as a result of their reliability and dedication to safety. To the awardees of the Road Star Awards, all of us would like to say thank you for a job well done. We will make our presentations in three groups, and as I call the names of the members of each group, please join Mr. Graham and Mr. Cato at the center of the room. They will present you with a certificate, and we will take photos of each group, and then you may return to your seats. Our Gold Road Star recipient has met all the criteria and has an awe-inspiring, or maybe that's awesome, a driving record, having driven at least 2.5 million miles with no preventable accidents. With, with the last name befitting this honor, please join me in recognizing Mr. Robert Miles. Our next group is our Silver Road Star recipients. They have driven at least 1.5 million miles consecutively without a preventable accident. Please join me in recognizing Mr. David Ennis, Mr. Martin McLean, Mr. Robert Frisbee, and Mr. Johnny Adams.
You're leaving your certificate. What's his name? Leaving certificate. Okay.
Our Bronze Road Star recipients have driven more than 1 million consecutive miles. Please join me in recognizing Mr. Earl Andrews, Mr. Desmond Bailey, Ms. Francine Vigil, William Brett, Mr. Virgil Colbert, Mr. Troy Dixon, Mr. Rudolph Gardner, and Ms. Bonita Harrison.
That completes the presentation.
Thank you very much. You know, getting a handle on this achievement, you know, is a little bit hard. But, you know, I turned to one of the gentlemen who were in the last category, and I said, well, how many, you know, how long a period is this, you know, this exemplary service? And he said, for him, it was 13 years. And I suspect if we asked all of the men and women who received this award, you know, we would have probably several hundred years of a record here. And so let's thank them all again for this. that should be on the front page of the Washington Post.
Yes.
That's just my own personal opinion. Versus other possibilities. We leave that to your imagination, collective and individual. All right. Now we go to the report by the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee, Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our first action item is actually a very exciting increase in service. We've been talking about service cuts and decreases. It's nice to see an increase. This is a demonstration by the District of Columbia. It would run 27 months. It's Metrobus Route S9, and it would become a peak period limited stop service. I move approval of this item.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin and seconded by Mr. Zimmerman, and I would like to make a brief comment because I had something to do with the funding of this particular expansion. Mayor Fenty and I joined together, actually before our budget process for FY09, to determine that this was a priority for us. And it does relieve significant congestion on the 16th Street routes, and it is a limited stop. It does go to Silver Spring, that's located in Maryland. And so we are assisting our sister jurisdiction with some additional service. And of course, there are a lot of people in D.C. who want to go to Silver Spring too. And that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's excellent.
So it's very much an example of regional comity, and then we're paying for it for 27 months. And we want to do this. We want to give this relief to the 16th Street bus routes. So is there further discussion on this matter? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the 16th Street line reimbursable project is approved. Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second item is an elimination of service, but it isn't really an elimination. It moves Metrobus Route 98, which is the link between U Street and Adams Morgan, to the District of Columbia Circulator Service. This has gone through all hearings and all other requirements. I move this action.
Mr. Benjamin moves this action. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Albert. Is that correct? Okay, good. I'd like to speak to this as well because I was the original author of the 98 when I came on this board in 1999. And it has always been known as the Adams Morgan U Street link, connecting the red line to the green line. And it has been a service that has operated nearly as long as I've operated on this board. But we're now changing it. And I want to emphasize a couple of points. Is that we are not doing the 98. This is a brand new route. And it is a route that runs from Woodley Park through Adams Morgan to Mount Pleasant, Columbia Heights, to U Street, to Logan Circle, and to McPherson Square. And it is a limited stop route. It is intended to reduce congestion and address congestion with this whole new system of operation, and that will be operating under the DC Circulator. And thus we eliminate Route 98. But let me say this, because we had a hearing on the N-22 that I chaired just a few days ago. And at this hearing, you'll be interested in knowing, I bet there were 40 bus operators who showed up at the hearing and who testified in opposition to the elimination of the N-22 on the basis that they were concerned, and I know you're going to be interested in this, Mr. Cato, on the basis of their concern about loss of jobs, and also their concern that the DC Circulator employment represented a significantly reduced wages and benefits as compared to Metro WMATA. And I've got to tell you, they really got my attention. And this, we'll be commenting on this when the N-22 termination comes before the board, I believe next month. Right, it would be next month. But I want to raise this issue now because I have checked on wages and benefits, and in fact, in terms of wages, the bus operators who testified at that hearing were right. The starting rate at Metro WMATA is $15.62 per hour. The starting rate at the DC circulator is $14. The top rate at WMATA is $26.03 per hour. The circulator is $17. Now, we did find, however, that it appears as though there are comparable health, dental, and vision benefits, although we probably do have an additional question in that regard. One of the things that we're going to be doing at the DC Council this year is to examine our DC circulator. And we're going to be looking at the systems in Arlington and in Montgomery County and in Fairfax to see how you're doing your separate bus systems. But the fact of the matter is that we do have concerns about this. I am not prepared to move anything to this issue today, but we are going to be developing possible amendments to the N22 termination, which we can then perhaps find a way to apply to this. Because I really don't want to be part of a system that undercuts labor at Metro WMATA by shifting service to another route, to another company or another transit system. And I think the points were well raised. Let me ask one question of Mr. Cato, which is, I would like to have your opinion on, in terms of the 98, which is what's before us right at the moment, I would like to have your opinion on what impact, if any, this will have on jobs at Metro WMATA.
Well, it will have no impact on jobs because of people losing their jobs, because we have sufficient vacancies to be able to accommodate the employees who are assigned to these services, including both operating and maintenance. It does limit the total number of positions within the budget, but again, no one will be impacted from a job standpoint. The individuals who were assigned to this work, based upon their seniority, will bid different work with the upcoming shakeup within the system.
Is there discussion on this? Ms. Hutchins, then Mr. Zerman.
Thank you for presenting the information, Mr. Graham. And there are some very interesting disparities. I think as you ask for the information to come back, if you would share with us what information you have on what living wage standards are as we look at these numbers. Is that acceptable?
Yes. Do you want to clarify that?
Just to see where those starting salaries start fall within the discussion of our region on a living wage, and particularly for jobs in the category of bus drivers. Wide Opportunities for Women has done a great deal of surveys, and they've looked at the cost of living in each of our areas. And so I guess the question would be, how do they fall?
Is it, Mr. Cato, do you understand the question?
I understand the question. Again, the circulator services under the District of Columbia, but we can get that information for you.
Well, we have a living wage in the District of Columbia, and I presume, I know there's a comparable living wage in Alexandria and Arlington and maybe other jurisdictions. Montgomery has one. But I think that is a fair question. And I also, before we hear from Mr. Zimmerman, I do want the clarification and detail on the benefits, because there was testimony at the N22 hearing about benefits, and I need more information rather than less on that, okay? Mr. Zimmerman?
I was under the impression that the DC circulator was currently being run for the District of Iowa Mata. Right, so one thing I don't understand is if a route is transferred from WMATA to the circulator, isn't it the same? I mean, under the current arrangement, are people, who's driving the buses?
No. The circulator service is under contract with a private provider.
We're only doing the vehicles?
We're not maintaining the vehicles either. The vehicles and the services are operated by a private provider who maintains those vehicles, who hires the staff, drivers, mechanics.
Okay, so we have nothing to do with it? I was mistaken.
We only manage the contract on behalf of the district.
Oh, it's just contract management?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't understand that. But at any rate, it's a contract that the DC government lets
just as Fairfax does for Connector and Arlington does for ART and that sort of thing?
We let the contract on behalf of the district. The district funds it, and we bring that contract to this board for approval, but it's fully funded by the District of Columbia.
And presumably the district government has, and I, you know, I, Mr. Graham may know this better, I just want to understand, because it's a different arrangement than, you know, than we have, or Dash has, or Ride-On has. I didn't realize that Metro was playing this sort of contractual management role and yet not actually running the service. So does the district government control the specifications on the contract? Are they subject to their, you know, what are their concerns, their rules, things like living wage and other, you know, benefits? And
it's controlled by the and working with the head of the Department of Transportation for the District of Columbia. The contract, the original contract, was let a few years ago, but the specifications have to be approved by the District of Columbia.
Okay.
We're just the, we just monitor the contract.
I mean, it just seems like any of those concerns ought to be dealt with, you know, frankly, in the D.C. Council or wherever, that, you know, it's up to them to do what they want to do with it, and we obviously have the similar kind of concerns, but we take care of those directly. It's a funny role when Mata's kind of in here by comparison.
That's exactly what we're
doing. No, that's fine. I was just trying to understand the situation because I didn't realize that as comparison with the other local bus services, there's a different relationship here with DC service than it is with our own. Because really, it shouldn't be a problem for us, you know, if DC decides it wants to take bus service into their, you know, in-house, into their own service, because that's the way they can best run the service, they ought to be able to make that decision. And any concerns they would have about, you know, working conditions and all that kind of thing, they ought to be able to address themselves. And I would, you know, hope that would be the case for any jurisdiction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, if I may, although it is within the realm of possibility, I'm using those words carefully. It is within the realm of possibility that we could stipulate, you know, that something regarding the transfer.
You mean that the WMATA board would impose a condition on a member jurisdiction? I find it hard to imagine that District of Columbia representatives would ever accept such an arrangement.
Well, I think what I am at, where I am at the present time on this is gathering information to see just exactly what. Because having heard witness after witness speak to this issue at the N-22 hearing, it raised concerns on my part. But certainly I understand fully the relationship of the D.C. government to this particular contract. How much does Metro WMATA get in terms of its management fee of this contract?
Off the top of my head, I do not have that answer. I know there's one person assigned to it, and there's of course, we have to utilize our procurement staff and others, but I can get that information and provide it with the other requests that you made. And this is an example of a request that would require 2 weeks, but we will get the information.
Okay, good. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the bus service on the Metro bus Route 98 is eliminated. Mr. Benjamin.
Item C has been dropped from our agenda. We move on to approval to modify line of credit and issue Metro Matters bonds. We do currently have a line of credit, really as part of our capital program, the Metro Matters program. That line of credit is $100 million. It's going to expire in May of this year. We also have a commercial paper facility, which is a temporary way of doing funding for $330 million that will expire in September of next year. Both of those need to be either replaced or extended. The proposal here is to replace or extend the line of credit and increase it to $250 million, which is not unreasonable given the financial demands of the authority, and to replace the commercial paper facility in a bond issue for $550 million, of which the actual amount is $488 million that would be for the program.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Ms. Hutchins. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The modification of the line of credit and issuance of Metro Matters bond is approved. Mr. Benjamin.
The last action item we have is the Clarendon Station subrecipient grant agreement. We have an agreement from the federal, or we have a grant from the Federal Transit Administration, which has funding left in it for a Clarendon Metro Canopy and Metro Park Improvement Project. We are transferring those funds to Arlington, who will be carrying out the project, and this approves that transfer of funds by what's called a subrecipient agreement. I move this item.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second? It's been moved, seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? 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 Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. The budget is amended for the Clarendon Pedestrian Canopy Project. Mr. Benjamin?
This completes our report.
Thank you very much. We now move to the report by Planning, Development, and Real Estate. Mrs. Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. The Planning and Development and Real Estate Committee met this morning, and there were two action items. The first item is the U Street Metro Rail and 14th Street Bus Transit Infrastructure and Investment Allocation Fund. That item is to provide a project that connects the U Street African American Civil War Memorial Stadium and the Columbia Heights Metro Rail stations with the improvements for pedestrian facilities, walkways, and lighting. The staff sought allocation to approval to allocate the $500,000 from the District of Columbia's portion of the TIF, and the staff also sought the request to authorize the negotiation and execute the memorandum of agreement with the View 14 developer for the dispersal of those funds from the, in accordance with the Federal Transit Administration. I would call the board's attention to the new blue sheet that responded to the request of outlining the balances of the monies that were that are affected in this item, and I would move approval of the item.
Ms. Hudson has moved approval. Mr. Benjamin has seconded. Is there a discussion? I just want to say that I very much support this, and this is a further transit-oriented development support from funds available to the District of Columbia that will. We have used these monies very strategically in the District of Columbia, and I think this is still another example of that. This will have very good purpose in this rough economy. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. And the U Street Metro Rail and 14th Street TIF allocation is approved. Ms. Hutchins.
The second item is the Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station TIF allocation for the City of Alexandria's request to use its funds to cover the cost of an early project action at the Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station. The staff requested approval to establish a reimbursable project for Potomac Rail Yard Station, establish an initial budget of $1.5 million using the City of Alexandria's fund balance in the account at Metro, and to increase the FY09 reimbursable projects budget from $20.05 million to $21.55 million. And to permit staff to negotiate a reimbursable agreement with the City of Alexandria and the general manager to execute the agreement and issue task on the P2D contractor for technical support. And again, you will have attached the blue sheet that first gives the balance in the overall TIF fund, as well as the funds that will come from Alexandria into the TIF fund for the City of Alexandria. And I move approval.
Ms. Hutchins moves approval, and it is seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? 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 Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it, and the Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station TIF allocation is approved. Ms. Hutchins?
And that completes our report.
Thank you very much. We now have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Administrative items. Is there objection to considering these items in block?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hudson.
There's been some questions raised about item number four, and I'd like to pull that one.
Yes.
Questions?
Is there objection to considering item 1, 2, 3, pass 4, 5 and 6 in block. Is there objection? Ms. Hewlett has moved approval. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. And so is there discussion on items 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6? Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and items 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6 are approved. Ms. Hutchins.
The questions raised on this item was the transfer of, of an indemnity to a third party for this transaction, and I guess the question that's been asked is whether or not this has been cleared with the jurisdictions and the effect of this action.
Our CFO is going to really respond to that answer, Ms. Kissel.
Yes, this has been actually cleared with the regional partners, and we have discussed this with them. This is the pursuant to a regional partner agreement that was established when the original smart trip card was regionally done and accepted through the system. So this actual agreement has been discussed with them, the indemnification.
I guess the understanding that I have is that, some of the jurisdictions have not had a chance to see this and have it clear with their legal and finance staff.
Okay. I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that, but if so, we could delay this particular action in order to follow up on that specifically.
Mr. Chairman, I think it is, would be appropriate that we defer it, and I don't know if there are any other concerns, but I know from our Fairfax side.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree.
Mr. Benjamin? You have a lot of agreement there. The specific thing of concern is, first of all, that we coordinate, but second of all, in the resolved before the last one, it has the Metro Board putting a requirement upon the local jurisdictions, which is something we generally do not do. So when we come back, it should be that everybody's agreed that this is the way it will be handled, not that we are going to require the jurisdictions to take a certain action, because we can't do that.
Understood.
Ms. Hutchins has moved to defer. Is there a second?
Second.
And it's been seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to defer item number 4 on the indemnification of credit card processor for Smart Trip third-party transactions, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And item number 4 is deferred. We have no further business, and we now move to, we have no further business. We have no further action items, let me say. We now move to reports. For the District of Columbia, Mr. Albert. For Maryland, Mr. Linton. For Virginia, Mrs. Hutchins.
I have nothing to report.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there another report?
Might I be indulged? I just wanted to briefly mention two things. It's a small Virginia item, but big for me today was the last day, and unfortunately he's already had to leave. But a staff person who has worked on Metro issues, serving Arlington and participating in the on the staff level with his colleagues around the region, Mr. Gus Vega, who works for our Department of Management and Finance and handles all matter of capital issues for us, bonds and so on, and all Metro items for a decade now, has been advising me at our county and working in conjunction, one of the people in the back of the room, has really played a big role for all of us, and he's retiring tomorrow. This was his last day here. Unfortunately, he had to leave already, I did want to acknowledge, since for almost all the time I've been here, he's been a great aid to me, and I believe has contributed in ways few people will ever know that are helpful to this system in the region. And I wanted to acknowledge that. I'd also like to say that I had the opportunity the other day to pay a visit to our Carmen Terman facility at Pensy Drive in Ms. Hewlett's jurisdiction. I got a good tour and some good instruction from Mr. Emilio Victoria, Mr. Dave Couch, Mr. Paul Gillum, and other staff who took time to meet with me and show me around that very extensive, vast facility that I think Mr. Graham and I may be the only ones left who are around when we agreed to purchase that. But what has been done is impressive and interesting and provides a real insight into aspects of how the system runs on both the bus and rail side that I think is valuable for a member to learn about. And I would suggest strongly that any member who can take the time, I think you'll learn a lot. Among other things, I got to see where they do training for people on escalator and elevator repair and to get some insight into some of the challenges that relate to the issues we deal with and frustrations we deal with on escalators. And I'll come back to some of those things because I do think that there are some aspects of this we maybe haven't explored as fully as we could. But at any rate, I want to just say thank you to the staff that took time to show me around there, and I appreciate the opportunity to learn more about our system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman, Ms. Hutchins?
I would just say that Mr. Zimmerman should say that they should at least reserve half a day, if not the full day, to do so, because it's a very large tour.
It was a good portion of my day.
Yes.
Further on reports, then we now proceed to our motion for executive session. I move that the board meet an executive session to discuss labor and personnel issues consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6C and contractual issues consistent with Roman numeral 6D. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Benjamin. Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Now, the meeting is now suspended for consideration of items in executive session. However, under our new rules, Council, you advised me on this, but under our new rules, we do not any longer certify the discussion, but if there are action items, we do not vote in executive session. We must return and reconvene to vote on any action item here, and that is our somewhat modified procedure. So with that said, this meeting is now adjourned.